It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave and Degenovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Degenovic.
He barricaded himself in a fourth grade classroom yesterday morning, and one by one, he shot and killed 19 school children, Dave. Two teachers also dead. We've learned this morning that he was wearing body armor and was carrying assault-style rifles with him.
Yeah, the body armor has become increasingly common. We knew that about the Buffalo shooter, and it really tells me that this wasn't just spontaneous. This was planned out. When you're wearing body armor, and quite honestly, he outgunned two law enforcement officers on his way to the school. He'd crashed his vehicle. They engaged him, but again, outgunned about 85 miles west of San Antonio, Texas.
In a moment, we're going to go live to Jim Ryan of ABC News, who's standing by in Uvalde, Texas, where the shooting went down. It happened yesterday morning at 11:30, and I was doing the math in my head when we found out about it in the afternoon. I wondered why we didn't know about it during our show, just outside of San Antonio. Because that would have happened potentially during our show. And then I started to look into that more and realized that news was slow to get out of Uvalde. It's a very, very small town, 15,000 people. I don't know the exact amount of time that this shooting, you know, took place. But we do know, as you said, Dave, that the gunman engaged two law enforcement officers, managed to slip by them, get into the school. We don't exactly know if the school was locked by through standard operating procedures, if the door was wide open because it's a small town and everybody trusts everybody in a small town.
And that was an angle to it, Debbie. Even though it is a small town, the fact that they did have officers and that there's so many layers to this that is terrifying. And listen, so much of this has turned political, has turned angry, has turned mean, which is all understandable. The political discourse, the frustration, everyone is. Everyone's devastated by this. And we're not going to dive heavily into the politics of this today because I'm not entirely certain what good it does right now. Right now, I'm mourning. I'm truly mourning. And Debbie, we heard from Aaron Katursky, who ABC News' Aaron Katursky, earlier in Utah's morning news, and he spoke specifically about these officers and really how they were outgunned.
They did, and were outgunned. The Uvalde Independent School District does have its own police officers armed, but he had an AR-15, so he was able to shoot the responding police officer outside before he made his way inside. And once inside a classroom, we're told he barricaded himself and opened fire on kids and on responding law enforcement.
And Debbie, in my own mind, when I think, oh, there's a police officer, there's law enforcement officers at my kid's school, I feel like that's enough. But when you're wearing body armor and you have assault rifles, then what do you do?
I'm watching Fox News coverage is live right now here, Dave, and I'm watching the monitor right here in the studio, and they're now confirming that the shooter had no criminal history, of course, none that we know of. He was 18 years old, enrolled in a high school, and then Aaron Katursky reporting as well in Utah's Morning News that he rarely attended high school, that he was posting some very dark posts on social media in the days leading up to the shooting, that his own grandfather, whom he was living with, did not know he had purchased guns, and in fact did not know the guns were in the home. We've also learned yesterday that the gunman allegedly shot his grandmother on the way to the high school. I don't know her condition yet. Last I heard, she was in critical condition, and that police are confirming that, in fact, and they confirmed this yesterday, that he did act alone. But there were so many red flags here in my mind, Dave. I call them retroactive red flags. The red flags that we might dismiss as we're looking at this this case, you know, in the moment, in real time. But as you look back, you realize that his behavior at school, the issue of him being accused of bullying and stalking of a former friend of his, are all issues that we want to look at. Like, what do we do if we report?
Great.
What do we do? What happens with that information if we report it? What do police do with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we'll talk to a former police chief about that. What can you do? But I want to. You talked about red flags,
right?
Aaron Katursky talks about some of those red flags.
Well, there is interest in the social media posts because they indicate a suspect that seemed to have a prevalence toward violence. There are social media posts with depictions of guns, with depictions of animal abuse, where the suspect is talking about, I don't know, cats and bats. I mean, it's pretty grim. But whether that is indicative of what was going to unfold at Robb Elementary School yesterday, authorities are still trying to sort that out, and whether any of these social media posts or anything in his background could give them some clues.
Yeah, clues to a motive, what caused it. Obviously, when you look at the social media posts or what we've heard about the social media posts, they were very disturbing, animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it still does not speak to a motive.
Personally, very, very curious about the latest developments in Uvalde, Texas, what Jim Ryan knows of ABC News. We are still trying to establish a connection with Jim. So as soon as he is able to get live with us, we will take you there live to Uvalde, Texas, where he has been standing by and will be standing by all day long for ABC. And I think unless you live there, you likely never heard of Uvalde, Texas until yesterday afternoon when the news started to break. It is a very small town, a population 15,000, with a would-be mass shooter among its residents who threw up some massive red flags. So we want to ask a retired police chief straight ahead when he calls the show, what happens after you report red flags to police? What did they do with that information? What can they legally do with that information? We'll find out next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dave and Dujanovic. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
It's a horrific massacre in Texas, Uvalde, Texas. We're talking about this morning. 19 kids, two teachers murdered. Police say it was an 18-year-old gunman. We're learning more about the gunman and I think quite a few red flags that went up before the attack, Dave.
Yeah, I saw Fox News report that the gunman had legally purchased two assault rifles. Mm-hmm. That on his way to the elementary school, he had shot his grandmother, apparently, before arriving at the school, crashed a car near the school, engaged with some armed police officers that were assigned to the school, and basically just shot his way through them. He was wearing body armor. He had two assault-style rifles and just outgunned them.
Here's ABC's Aaron Katursky when he called Tim and Amanda this morning.
They did, and were outgunned. The Uvalde Independent School District does have its own police officers armed, but he had an AR-15, so he was able to shoot the responding police officer outside before he made his way inside. And once inside a classroom, we're told he barricaded himself and opened fire on kids and on responding law enforcement.
Let's back it up. Days, weeks, months, years, the red flags that stood out as Aaron Katursky was speaking this morning on Utah's Morning News about what he knows about the alleged shooter. He's deceased. So he was on the scene for at least 30 minutes before being shot and killed by a Border Patrol agent. And let's talk about those red flags. Aaron Katursky said he spoke with the shooter's grandfather, who he lived with grandma and grandpa, said he was unaware that he'd purchased two rifles that were actually being stored in his house. And here's one of the red flags that really stood out to me, these very disturbing social media posts, Dave, that he'd made in very, very, very recent past.
Well, there is interest in the social media posts because they indicate a suspect that seemed to have a prevalence toward violence. There are social media posts with depictions of guns, with depictions of animal abuse, where, the suspect is... talking about, I don't know, cats and bats. I mean, it's pretty grim. But whether that is indicative of what was going to unfold at Robb Elementary School yesterday, authorities are still trying to sort that out, and whether any of these social media posts or anything in his background could give them some clues.
And Aaron Katursky was, as he's reporting, talked to friends. And they described him as troubled.
The friends have described instances of bullying, of aggressiveness, of self-mutilation, where he cut scars into his cheeks. Friends said that he did not come to school regularly. We're not sure what the school disciplinary record was or whether he might have been barred from graduation. But if any of that has come into play, the authorities haven't yet said.
Now, a lot of these things are the red flags that you were talking about, Debbie. Warning signs, right? We wanted to talk to a former police chief and find out what can law enforcement do when they see these and are made aware of the red flags, of these warning signs. What can you do with them? Randy Watt joins us right now, who's a retired chief of police for the Ogden Police Department. Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
What can be done if somebody sees a post that is creepy or dangerous, maybe not even a direct threat, but these red flags? If I see something, I say something, right? But what can police do once we tell you guys?
The first thing we can do is we can investigate, so we can look into it. There will be, we could assign a school resource officer if it involves some new student age, assign a detective if it's someone who's outside of that age group, and we can begin to talk to people, and we can try to formulate some type of picture of that individual. We can attempt to determine if there's a presence of firearms in that individual's life, and if there are violations of law, it has to be a violation of law, which would allow us to take action to do something about that.
Randy, when you talk about violation of law, would it have to be perhaps a direct threat on somebody's social media post or an illegal purchase of guns, not a legal purchase of guns?
Yes. Some states have the red flag law, which has been shown to not be very, very effective in the long run and also been abused a bit in other situations. Most states do not have red flag laws where there's an arbitrary ex parte process for removing someone's firearms. And we could get all involved in Second Amendment and constitutional impacts and effects. But those laws don't exist here in the state of Utah, per se. And so it has to involve a violation of codified law. It has to have a nexus to a law which allows you to rightfully seize under the Fourth Amendment someone's personal property.
When you're a police chief, obviously, if you're investigating and you find this individual is troubled, perhaps even dangerous, I think cops have a great sixth sense a lot of times. They can tell that this individual is dangerous. But do you have the resources? Do you have enough mental health options when you're dealing with some of these individuals, and especially ones that are kids?
Well, we have an emergency provision under the Mental Health Act. If someone is deemed in the officer's eyes, there's reasonable belief that they are a danger to themselves or others, then we can do an involuntary commitment. That involuntary commitment lasts only as long as it takes to get that individual reviewed. For instance, and we lose jurisdiction as soon as we turn them over to a mental health facility. And then, of course, the mental health folks, they have their guidelines and their rules to follow. So the likelihood of that person being kept for a significant period of time,
right,
or cause to undergo some type of an intervention, a mental health intervention, or long-term attempt to improve their mental situation and reduce the threat of violence is based on that activity, and it has nothing to do with the police.
Yeah, and it's an acute thing, right? I mean, it's you can't keep kids in perpetuity. You know, it has a beginning and an end time.
We appreciate Randy Watt, retired chief of police of the Ogden Police Department, for letting us in. Let us be that fly on the wall within the police department. What happens if you see something and you say something? Want to go live now to Jim Ryan, who's standing by in Uvalde, Texas, with the latest from ABC News. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. We'll get a lot more information in the next hour and a half or so when Governor Greg Abbott and a list of other people, including law enforcers, lawmakers, all come together to discuss what happened yesterday at the elementary school here in Uvalde. The latest is that there are at least six people still injured in the hospital, three children, one adult at University Hospital in San Antonio, and then two other adults at Brooke Army Medical Center also in San Antonio. Those two are in critical condition. Beyond that, though, we know now that 19 children and two teachers were killed in that massacre yesterday.
Jim, did it seem to all the victims or most of the victims were the ones that were in this one classroom, or was the killing spree leading up to the classroom?
We're told that it was all in one classroom. All the students and those two teachers were in one room. And that's where the suspect was barricaded when a border patrol officer confronted him there in that situation, opened fire, and killed him, the 18-year-old. That Border Patrol agent, by the way, was also injured, but is a non-life-threatening injury.
Jim Ryan from ABC News in Uvalde, Texas, calling the show live right now to bring us an update on the latest, that mass shooting that happened at Robb Elementary School yesterday morning. Jim, usually in these circumstances, police identify a motive, and typically they can identify a motive pretty quickly. Do you have any information yet on a motive in this case?
No, not really. You know, if there was mental illness involved here, that's a possibility. It doesn't appear to be a race-involved incident like the one at Buffalo. Doesn't appear to be something like we saw out in El Paso. This is or a family sort of dispute that grows out of control like Sutherland Springs. This appears to be one teenage kid who had some problems, maybe emotional problems, we don't know, but who decided to take that out on an elementary school yesterday.
Jim, we know this individual is 18 years old. Was he still in school, or had he already graduated and moved past those years?
His grandfather tells ABC News that he was not in school. He did not graduate last year, but pulled himself out of school and has not been attending class. He was a student at Uvalde High School, but isn't anymore, or was not before yesterday.
Jim Ryan, thank you for the update.
We are going to continue our ongoing coverage and up coverage here at KSL News Radio on the massacre at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, bringing it close to home to ask the question, what safety measures should you expect at your own child's school? We'll have a live conversation with a school safety expert in 3 minutes.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.